someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
She has stood on the edge of biology and anthropology and made a bridge for people of color. From the bones of ancestors long forgotten to the plants that surround us all, she has helped us as director, curator of the W. Montague Cobb Research Lab, make leaps in evolutionary understanding. And as a result, we are much wiser than we once were. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is the pioneering scholar from the Department of Biology, Howard University Professor Dr. Fatima Jackson. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So you grew up in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, yes.
Tell me what that was like and how many siblings you had and what your parents did.
So I'm actually a second-generation Coloradoan. My father was born in Denver, and my grandfather came out from Missouri and after Reconstruction, and they were dirt farmers. And so they got some land out in eastern Colorado and started building a town, one of the black towns called Deerfield. And that was the town that everyone was living at. But then as they were rain-fed agriculture. And so with rain-fed agriculture, what it means is that you get a crop when it rains, and when it doesn't, you starve. So a couple of seasons of that, and many of the people moved into Denver when the railroad came and started working in Denver. My father was born in Denver, and I was born in Denver. I was the eldest child of my mother and father, and my father passed away when I was 6 years old. And so I had one brother that passed away. But I grew up in a community of lots of cousins and aunts and uncles and everyone in everybody else's business. So it was a very supportive and nurturing environment. And I say that because I think that it has lent itself to a lot of the security that I feel and confidence that I feel as a person. So there was no barrier that I saw as insurmountable growing up.
Now, your mother grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and obviously she also had a certain level of exposure to higher education that we often see as an influence to others who come behind. What was that? What did she do, and what was that influence on you?
Oh, yes. My mother. So my grandmother, her mother, was one of the trustees at Wilberforce University. And she finished high school with her children in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So that's really, to me, it speaks to the character of a person when they're willing to go back to school with their own children and finish.
That's absolutely right.
And then my mother had gotten, she'd come out to Denver after World War II to work on a master's degree. So I grew up in a community and in a family particularly where education was stressed. So we had holes in the rugs and, you know, not nice furniture, but we always had books.
Right.
And so we were encouraged to read and to think and to debate, even when we were eating leftovers.
But before anthropology, you had an interest in chemistry. Where was that interest in chemistry, I would say, cultivated initially? And then why the change to anthropology?
Yeah, probably at home, you know, playing around with mixing chemicals together in the kitchen and almost burning down the kitchen. but then in high school, I went to Manual High School, and they had an AP chemistry class. And I really liked it and wished that I could get more, but we didn't have the number of labs that they had at the white schools. There was de facto segregation. So the schools I went to up to high school were all predominantly African American, with some Mexican Americans and some Japanese Americans. So the missing element were middle class white people. And the schools that they went to did have more laboratory sections. And I kind of fault that for my continuing in chemistry, because you have to get the background. Certain disciplines, you have to have the background early, and you'll be able to stick with it so that you can continue through. And without that, it's kind of difficult. But I came into anthropology because at that time, this is late 1960s, people were wearing little short mini skirts and go-go boots. And I couldn't find any go-go boots that really fit me. And I was wondering, who's the model for these boots? You know, these little cheap boots coming from I don't know, probably imported from someplace where people had very different body shapes.
Right.
So it was, you know, the personal interest in human morphology that got me into anthropology. And the fact that I realized early on that in order to have a voice, you needed to have the education.
Right. So you went to Cornell, where you got your BA, your MA, and your PhD. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was one of those experiences where I remember complaining to my grandmother, and she said, you're going to have to root hog or die poor, meaning you're going to have to dig deep into everything that we've put into you, all the love and attention and energy that we've given you. You're going to have to dig into that, otherwise you're not going to have anything. So it's totally on you. You know, you have to root hog or die poor. And she also told me things like, don't take any wooden nickels and things like that, you know. So those have stuck with me because they're metaphors that can carry you through the turbulent times in life. Cornell was difficult academically, but it was a challenge that I just took it as a challenge. And so I would be the first one in class, even if I was in class in my pajamas. And I was there to meet the professor and introduce myself to the professor to make sure that they understood I wasn't going to be their B or C or D student. I was their A student.
Excellent.
So get it straight.
That's you know? Right. You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Fatima Jackson, professor in the Department of Biology here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So you obviously had a great experience at Cornell. Mm-hmm. In between that experience as well, you spent some time in Tanzania, where you've also had an opportunity to look at, again, the relationships of nutrition and disease.
Yes. When
you look at sickle cell, malaria, what was that experience like?
It was so profound. I learned so much from the Tanzanians. Not only did they teach me their classification of the world and their worldview, but they also, I got to see malaria up front. In fact, I nearly died from malaria. And the parasite, I had gotten it after a trip to Dar es Salaam, so I must have picked up a subspecies of parasite that I wasn't immune to out in the country where I was living. And I thought I was going to die. And it's very interesting the things you do when you're going to die. First of all, I started praying. And then I said, God, if you just let me live, I'll go back to graduate school. As if you can bargain with God. That's but, you know, right. I was a young person. But I said, I'll go back and I'll learn about malaria and I'll study it and I'll do my dissertation on it. And when I got back to Cornell 3 years later, I was I almost got trapped into studying neurobiology because people were talking about sociobiology. But then I remembered this commitment I had made to God in my moment of severe malaria. I mean, I even went blind because of the malaria. And so it was really a mind-opening experience for me. And I subsequently majored minored in parasitology and population genetics to go with the biological anthropology, because I felt that I didn't know enough to protect myself from malaria.
Right. Now, the cub collection here at Howard is extremely special.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
When you look at some of the things that we do out of that Montague cub research activity, which
yes.
the New York African Burial Ground Project, et cetera?
So the Cobb collection is one of two collections at the Cobb Research Lab. And actually, the curatorship of the Cobb collection is why I came to Howard University. I mean, I had met Dr. Cobb in 1981, and I was very impressed by him. But I still didn't really understand what he was doing. And that collection, it plus the New York African Burial Ground Collection, give us 400 years of African-American biological history. No one else in the world has that, only Howard University. And it allows us to look deep into our ancestral past and understand what are the disorders that we're facing now. And we have been able to extract DNA from the collection, and that is giving very exciting results. You know, I can hardly contain myself because it is allowing us to talk about who we are and where we've come from at a level that has not been possible before.
And that's very important, because when you talk about the transatlantic slave trade and the way we traditionally teach that mm-hmm. in our traditional schools, it gives a very, I would say, monolithic experience about the African diaspora. And obviously, based on the work you're doing, there's a much broader story being told here.
Oh, yes. And the continuity between the experiences that those ancestors had and the effects on us today. You know, through the epigenome, through the chemical modification of the genes, so that we have changes in gene expression patterns that can only be accounted for by something that happened 2-3 generations back. So the Cobb collection in particular, but also the remnants of the New York African Burial Ground, allow us to see deeply. And I believe it's absolutely integral for us to reconstruct our health disparities, to be able to understand what life was like for us 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, and to have concrete evidence-based scholarship. That's what the Cobb collection does. It gives us evidence-based scholarship on our past.
And as you look forward to the research activity to come, what are some of the exciting opportunities you think that exist around the corner? Obviously, health and disease sounds like one aspect of it, and especially when you look at some of the communities we live in now, some of the nutrition we take in, et cetera, the impact that it may potentially have on healthcare disparities. But as you look forward, what are some of the other things you'd want our listeners to be kind of on the lookout for over the next 5 to 10 years coming out of the research project?
So last spring, we started trying to create a genomic database for African descended peoples, because the knowledge of our genetic variability is very low. And as a consequence, we can't build on all of the exciting things in pharmacogenomics and gene environment interactions. We don't know who we are yet, because most of human variation is in Africa. We're an African descended people. So, but you know, we often talk about the admixture, but the biggest admixture in African Americans or African peoples of the Americas is admixture among the different African groups that came together. So that hasn't been explored at all. So we are trying to establish a reference database so that we can compare the African genomes in the New York African Burial Ground and in the Cobb collection with contemporary African Americans, and, you know, get a sense of you know, what kinds of variation are we carrying around, and what does it mean? And what does it mean in an evolutionary sense, in a biomedical sense, you know, in an ecological sense? And then we'll know how to intervene to optimize our lives.
Absolutely excellent. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Fatima Jackson. She is the director and curator of the W. Montague Cobb Research Lab here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.